Robinson protected, escaping, gonna run for it. He get a block on the edge, he's gonna get there, first down and more, and Deshaun Watson inside the 10, into the end zone for a touchdown! 49 yards!
Just the start of the Around the NFL podcast presented by Head & Shoulders. Deshaun Watson's 49-yard scamper on third and long, the only touchdown of the game on Thursday Night Football, and that's all that the Houston Texans needed, a 13-9 win over the Cincinnati Bengals, who lose for the second straight game in their building. A terrible loss for the Bengals. Dan Hans is here, along with Greg Rosenthal. We'll get Mark Sessler into the mix just in a little bit to go through all the Week 2 games. But first, we talk about the events of Thursday, and we'll start with the Texans, Greg Rosenthal. Deshaun Watson was not brilliant. In fact, he looked very shaky early on, and this is his first start on his 22nd birthday. But one big play was enough on Thursday night.
Hey, when it mattered, Watson was cooking like those drums in the background, you know, leading into that.
Those drums really do cook, Greg.
I mean, that's getting me fired up. Look, Watson, he had less than 5 yards per attempt. That's the Gabbert zone throwing the ball. But I was impressed that when they absolutely needed a drive, that's when they stopped, you know, running first and second down. In the fourth quarter, he has his best drive of the game, which was essentially summarized by, let's throw it to DeAndre Hopkins every down. Let him be more physical than the Bengals cornerbacks, and they ate up 6 minutes of clock. So it was an extremely conservative game plan by Bill O'Brien, but these are the kind of wins he's looking for. Ugly wins as he builds this offense around Deshaun Watson and lets J.J. Watt and the defense win the game. They are really the big stars.
Yeah, the defense played extremely well and once again made Cincinnati's offense, and they have a lot of problems, Cincinnati. On both sides as well, but especially on offense.
Just on offense. The defense is fine.
All right.
Played well.
Okay. I think that's – well, what are you really excited about? We'll get to that. What are you really excited about with the Bengals as they now try to dig out of an 0-2 hole with only 6 home games left on the schedule? But I think the interesting thing with Watson, I thought, Greg, was how early in the game, how utterly – I don't want to say he's scared, because this guy's been on the biggest stage in college and he was born for this type of spotlight, but how clearly the NFL game, he seemed a little spooked early on, certainly not comfortable early on. And what happened, and Chris Collinsworth did a nice job illuminating this on the telecast on NFL Network, said as the game wore on, you could tell him starting to get his footing a little bit and get comfortable. And I don't think he's able to have that drive at the end of the game if he's not able to calm himself down. And I think that's what he did.
Yeah, and that it kind of explains in one game why Deshaun Watson should be playing over Tom Savage. This offense is going to struggle no matter what. They tried to have some extra offensive linemen to shore up pass protection. That mostly helped, although it didn't help stop Geno Atkins. That's something to get excited about. I mean, Geno Atkins was the best player on the field. But you're only going to get better with Watson with the experience, so it's something to build off. And if you can win some games along the way, then you're going to hang around in the AFC South.
And, yes, on the Cincinnati side of the ball, I thought it was a dreadful performance, again, by Andy Dalton. It doesn't look as bad in the box score as last week when he had 5 turnovers.
No, 20 for 35, 224. If you didn't watch the game, then you're like, okay, he had a normal game. But you're absolutely
just
right.
Just not moving the ball. And I tweeted it during the game because if you're a fan of a team like me, I'm a Jet fan, you get frustrated because these losses happen when you don't have a quarterback that can really lead an offense well. And right now, Andy Dalton's lost, let's face it, because he looks like 2012 Mark Sanchez. Not able to consistently move the offense, missing throws, making strange decisions. I didn't like that he was targeting Erickson with a game on the line.
Yeah,
I'm forgetting what this guy's name.
Alex Erickson, and they didn't even give him a chance to catch it. It reminded me of a play that didn't matter from last week's game by Dalton. The game was over at that point, but he threw it out of bounds on fourth down in that game. And it's like, what are you thinking? He didn't give Erickson a chance. He had 2 or 3, and I think that's what you're thinking about, wide open receivers that could have been big plays.
Brandon LaFell, the monster play left on the field over
right,
the throw.
That he missed. And Marvin Lewis said after the game, you know, that Dalton's job is secure and they got to let Andy be Andy. But, you know, he looks more like 2012 Andy Dalton, or what he looks like is, you know, after midnight, primetime Andy Dalton. I'm not into QB wins.
After midnight.
I don't know.
That's after the game.
It gets late, you know. That's the press conference. It's just crazy, and I think this is why people have a lower opinion of Andy Dalton than he probably deserves overall, that he has had so many poor primetime games. His teams – I'm not into QB wins, but it's his teams are 5-12 in primetime, and they win 2 out of 3 games other than that, and it's just – I think it's just random ultimately, but this is a limited passing attack, and they can't kind of figure out what they want to do.
I mean, he needs to have a bounce back effort soon, because AJ McCarron is a guy that's been kind of waiting in the wings, and and Dalton, you know, got excuses last year, and I thought on a lot of levels last year he deserved the pass, but to open up the season like this, playing as poorly as he is, something might have to change. And here's something telling, Greg, before we get out of here. This comes from a local guy, WKRC TV in Cincinnati, a tweet from Richard Skinner. Several Bengals players in the locker room said out loud, "We just lost to the worst team in the league."
Well, I think
frustration is on high, and that seems like a shot at the Texans, but that probably is more a product of this team knows it's a lot better than this, and they're playing way below their ability.
Well, I think it's a shot at the Texans offense, because the Texans defense is good. But when you're a defensive player, I have a feeling that's who's maybe saying these things, and you see Andy Dalton's going up against a Texans defense that's missing their 2 starting cornerbacks late in that game. Kevin Johnson, Jonathan Joseph were both out, and yet Cincinnati was not able to attack it. That's extreme frustration, only 12 first downs to start 0-2 at home with the fewest amount of points in the first 2 weeks for any NFL team since the 2009 Rams.
Ugh. Woof.
It's rough. It's as rough as it gets, and they're going to Green Bay next week. So that is a recipe for 0-3.
The game on the line, and you target Alex Erickson. I don't get it. Now we're going to go through the rest of the week 2 games. Take it away, me.
The Around the NFL podcast can sing the Spanish parts of Despacito.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with some heroes. Mark Sessler to my left, Greg Rosenthal to my right. What's up, boys? What was that? That was almost like a fever dream of a money tag.
That was amazing. Little Despacito shout out. Like, I think the most popular song, video, in YouTube history. How about that?
I mean, I know
about that with the pop culture knowledge.
I know about 16 words in Spanish, but I will say this. I saw money here this morning very early, and I know he's a busy guy. He's the Chargers radio announcer, but I believe he came in solely at one point this week just to record that.
Wow.
So very committed to our show. I appreciate that. It's hard to find that sometimes.
Matt Money Smith, our intro guy.
What a guy. This is the Around the NFL podcast presented by Head & Shoulders, and it is our Thursday preview show. You heard at the very top of the show the Texans-Bengals recap. Greg and I took you through that, but now we're going to go through all the rest of the Week 2 games, previewing them. And, Mark, what a Week 2 it's going to be.
I love Week 2 because I think Week 1 creates all these myths.
I was trying to sandbag you there, but then you actually turned it
into take. Yeah. Well, that's came at you with something, but I really do like Week 2. It equalizes a lot of nonsense.
That's going to be our new running segment. Week 3, Mark, what a week.
I have to come up with 17 individual perspectives on each week. I mean, it becomes a complete, you know, visual bizarreness by the time we get to 8 or 9.
So we're going to go through all the games, and I'll tell you how many games. Because guess what? Ain't no hurricane going to stop the NFL this week. Okay? Because that means 32 teams. 2 teams already played. 32 minus 2 equals 30. 30 divided by 15 equals 2. 2 teams play in every game times 15. 15 games to talk about. I got there.
I think the equation broke down at some point.
I got
point,
lost.
But yeah,
I got
know,
lost in
lost.
The numbers.
It was a lot longer. I, like, wrote a couple texts during that.
I got it's like in the Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe.
The accent
all the
started
numbers
to fade
are everywhere.
Away.
It was all kind of like I fell into the numbers themselves.
Yeah.
But then I came out and knew that we're talking about
no different
games.
Than that.
All right, guys, we have so much to get to. We should just get straight into it. And why don't we go, Mark? These are very heady times for Mark Sessler, who's had an entire week of the football cognoscenti. Talking about what a nice effort it was from the Browns.
Oh, wow.
And then
starting with the Browns.
Big Ben Roethlisberger saying, ooh, keep an eye on the Browns. They're special. So now what do they do? They travel to Baltimore, the old nemesis, the team that stole their Lombardi, some people would say. Not me.
Well, I think those people are correct, but continue.
What did Ben say again?
Ben said they're
essentially.
They're for real.
He said essentially.
No, I just we're really glad just
we're,
that
we're glad that we met them in week one versus when they really get going.
Well, we'll see if that's how it actually plays out. What you were saying, how
I
was.
I just wanted to set up your little Ben bit again.
It's like, those Browns are for real. Ben Roethlisberger, direct quote. All right, here we go. They're playing the Ravens in Baltimore. Ravens 1-0. The defense, we know all about how good they looked last week in shutting out Cincinnati. Mark, what do you think about this matchup? First of all, how do you think DeShone Kizer is going to fare now that he's going to have another tough game against another division opponent? Is this trouble for him this week two matchup?
Well, I don't think you're going to run into a tougher defense potentially all season. And it's hard as a rookie quarterback to deal with Pittsburgh in week one, who took him down seven times, seven sacks, to now have to go deal with a Terrell Suggs-led defense that last week Terrell Suggs absolutely owned Cincinnati's front five. Dominant. And but so did a rash of other Ravens players. So it is a challenge right away for Cleveland's rebuilt offensive line.
And there's no reason to think you can run on the Ravens, because I believe only the very best running teams are going to have a chance against this Ravens team. They would be my pick to be the number one run defense at the end of the year because of Brandon Williams, because of Pierce, who's really stepping up as a big-time player. And that means you're asking a lot of DeShone Kizer, which they did last week too. I mean, that's the thing that's so striking watching him. It's a bunch of 5-7-step drops. It's asking him to read the whole field. It's a lot of deep throws. Like, they are asking him to do some next-level stuff. He's a lot of fun to watch, but I think he was protected pretty well. Those sacks were mostly on him.
On him, yeah. I mean, at least four of them I thought were. And Cleveland's wide receiver core, it concerns me that they drafted four wide receivers last year. None of them have really stepped into a role that you could call a difference maker. Three of them are essentially ghosts at this point. And you don't really, in Kenny Britt, have someone you can lean on. Corey Coleman is the one guy that I've seen growth from him. That touchdown catch where he got jarred at the line. I mean, he's a strong wide receiver.
I want to ask you a question quickly, Mark, which is that you've talked like for so long that having to face Ben Roethlisberger and Flacco. Now you have an AFC North quarterback that you can call to sneak it on third and one and pick up a first down like he did last week, or a fourth down on the goal line. Now you've got that guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's been literally since,
there's no question there,
1994. You'd have to go back to when they had a competent quarterback, I think.
Question. One more Browns question I have. What is the deal? What's going on behind the scenes, you guys think, with Kenny Britt? Because it did strike me a bit odd that he dropped a pass. All right, it's a bad drop.
It was a bad drop.
Let's calm down. Like, Hugh Jackson came after Britt in the media, and you just wonder if maybe Britt can be a knucklehead behind the scenes if this is a starting of a souring relationship right off the bat, which wouldn't be good because they need Britt
to
perform.
They do, because it was either Britt or Terrell Pryor, essentially, in that role. And Britt had a good season last year, but I think, sometimes the Kenny Britt experience has gone sour. We know that. And I think Hugh Jackson was really calling him out last. I mean, it was a disappointing showing for Britt.
You think that the Browns can win this game, though? Are you pretty confident that they
Well, here's what I think. I think the one way is that Baltimore's offense, especially for me, when you take Danny Woodhead out of that mix, he had a big role last week. They ran the ball okay. I don't think that Joe Flacco's all the way back. I do think that Cleveland is going to do something in this game and get to 1-1. That is why they are.
You going to do it?
They are.
Do
no
it?
Way.
I'm locking it up.
Whoa.
Every year I must do this early, and I've been humiliated probably five times in a row with the early season Browns lock, but they are going 1-1.
Wow. Okay, I got the Ravens.
Yeah, I'll take the Ravens, but hey, I think it's a close defensive game.
Kudos to you. You want to peek behind the eyes of Mark Sessler into his soul? He could try to downplay his excitement all he wants. He's picking the Browns on the road in week two.
18-16.
Let's move on and talk about a inter-conference game. Intra. Help me out, guys.
Intra.
Intra.
Out of conference game.
Out of conference game. The Buffalo Bills took care of business against the Jets in week one. They had to. And frankly, they probably should have took care of business a little more thoroughly. Now they go on the road. Right, that was a little unnecessary shade at the Bills. They won in week one. What do you want from me?
By the way, I'm dead wrong. It's not intra. It's out of conference. It's not intra. I didn't even know what the matchup was.
Okay. So the Bills now go on the road to face the Panthers. And, You know, we did a network hit on here on this campus, NFL Network, about who do you trust, Cam Newton or Tyrod Taylor. Greg, why would people not be trusting Cam Newton right now?
Because he had 4 or 5 throws last week that just were wildly off target. I mean, 10, 15 yards. He had an out route that lost a little steam on the way there. Now, he also stepped out in the second half, was 6 for 6. He had some fastballs, had some nice throws, but I want to see more out of him. And I also want to apologize to Tyrod Taylor and LeSean McCoy and this Bills offense that we expected to go out there and just not look very good. And they look like they look very professional. 400 yards, look like the running game. And then you remembered, oh, yeah, Tyrod Taylor and LeSean McCoy are absolutely special runners at what they do, and they can take it to any team.
Yeah, I mean, I do think Newton seemed a little more comfortable in the second half, especially in the fourth quarter. I think he went 6 for 6 down the stretch in that game. But he had some wild off-target throws early. There was a pass to Ed Dixon in the end zone, which was unforgivable, way over his head. Here's the thing.
What do you mean unforgivable?
Yeah, like I've forgiven him. It's no harm.
I'm not getting over it.
Things will never be the same.
I will not get over it.
I mean, I'm fine with it at this point.
Well, you guys are different people. I take this game very seriously. No, here's the thing. If the Bills did look good, they were also playing the Jets.
Yeah, but the Jets' defense isn't bad.
Dealing with Carolina's defense.
Greg, I got to say, I feel like you got to calm down about the Bills a little bit. You've been all pumped up since Sunday. Let's face it, the Jets are barely an NFL team right now.
My point is, Cam Newton
this is the real competition.
Cam Newton used to be the best running quarterback. Now it's Tyrod. LeSean McCoy doesn't break tackles. He breaks ankles. He's putting people on the ground. I mean, there was one run in that Jets game. He literally put 3 Jets on the ground just because they're slipping and falling trying to get this.
Well, and don't you think the Panthers have gone out of their way to an excessive amount to not have Cam Newton be a running quarterback the same way that they had to rely on him in the past? The Bills are still letting Tyrod do what he needs
to do. And the Panthers have to be excited. Their offensive line makeover is a great 1-for-1 after 1 week, and their defense, which I love this year, could not have looked better. So I think they like what they saw.
Greg Rosenthal, December 1st, are the Buffalo Bills in the AFC wildcard picture? Put your name on it.
December 1st.
Put your name on it, kid.
Yes. Because you could be 5-6, and you're in the picture for sure. So
That was a soft backing.
It was pretty soft. So a bit kind of crappy is what you're saying. Like, that's not very strong.
Like their rookie first-round pick, Tre'Davious White.
Let's move on.
Jamming that in there.
More out-of-conference football.
Thank you.
But isn't it interconference? Intra?
Intra, I believe, would be, you know, inside one conference. But, we do have people behind the glass that could potentially look that up for
like
us.
Like an interstate goes
multiple
states. Because,
at this point,
states.
This is becoming embarrassing. None of us know what the word means.
All right, well, let's keep working on this. Maybe it's something Erica could help us out with. The Arizona Cardinals, crushing news this week that the David Johnson wrist injury is serious enough where he's going to go on IR, and they hope to get him back in December, but even that is not a promise. So that's where the Cardinals are. And, oh, by the way, they blew a fourth-quarter lead last week, and they're 0-1. Here's the good news. There's plenty of football left, and your Week 2 matchup is in Indianapolis against a team that I think the Colts, if you had to make a pick who looked the worst of any of the teams in Week 1, I think you have to say the Colts because the offense didn't have a clue with Scott Tolzien, a quarterback. And I don't know, have they made the announcement yet who's starting in Week 2?
No, they're splitting first-team reps in the middle of September, which is a real – I can't remember that ever happening, where a team hasn't decided. They're acting like it's camp and splitting reps.
Give Todd Bowles a couple of weeks. He'll help you.
If Jacoby Brissett has a chance to start and he hasn't been on the team at all yet, doesn't he need all the snaps?
Well, Rob Chudzinski did emphasize that he thought this would be a mountain to climb for Brissett to get in and learn this offense and be able to operate it.
Ooh, slice me off a piece of that Jake Brisket.
Wait, you know what I just realized?
Yeah.
We have a Jake Brisket drop, and we have a Scott Tolzien drop.
Scott Tolzien. Scott Tolzien.
We've got Tom Savage, too, so the AFC South leads the league in quarterback drops.
Yeah, so.
Tom Savage is real bad at football. Oh.
So we got everything covered in the AFC South just about. But, all right, so here's the question. They look so bad. Are the Colts that bad? Because if they merely had a bad week and they're trying to get things straightened out. You expect a good effort at home here, but there's also a chance, I think, even without David Johnson and the Cardinals as bad as Carson Palmer looked, that they might go in there and take care of business.
I don't like the way the team still is built for the most part, and you're missing a premier quarterback. They are that bad because they –
You're missing a premier cornerback, too. They're
right.
Their best only defensive player. You're missing your center. Your right tackle just went on injured reserve. There's some good players on the Colts offense, but it's just a handful. That's not a team.
Yeah, and I mean, we're starting to look at the Cardinals and wonder the same thing because it's just – I think it's you say the good news, there's a lot of football left. That's true.
Thank you.
I really am concerned about this season and where they're going to be. This is a team that said they wanted to chase the Super Bowl.
There are some curious Carson Palmer throws, similar to Cam Newton, where the kind of the steam just went out of it at the end. That was worrisome. But even a bigger worry was they had the second worst ranked pass protection of any team. Carson Palmer took a lot of grief, as he should have in that game. But there were a lot of players on that offense that struggled. I mean, David Johnson, by the way, struggled. The offensive line struggled.
Right.
Like, they had more problems than just Carson Palmer.
I'll tell you what, I'm ready to stick a fork in the loser of this game. Do we still do that, Seg?
No. Well, I mean, not typically in week two or week three, but it's possible.
It's one of the few segments I've successfully killed. Yes.
I do believe the loser of this game is going to be in a world of hurt. Not only are they going to be banged up, but they're going to be an 0-2 hole. That's going to be hard to get out.
I would lock this up for the Cardinals if I didn't feel like it's too much
of a
layup
of a
at this
too.
Point.
Yeah.
Oh, it would be let's pass it. No, the Colts, I think, you shouldn't be able to lock
it up. You had a bad lock it up effort last week, didn't you?
That's true. We forgot that
you blinked on the Rams, and then you took the Saints.
At a road underdog.
That's a fail.
It's a bad job. Sad horn.
We didn't call you out on it on the Tuesday show, but on some level, it's kind of your responsibility to own it, too.
Well, I was called out. I was called out for flubbing my lock, and so I would only point to the producer and say, why would you not also tag Greg in that effort?
Yikes.
Let's move on.
A little late, but there we go.
Speaking of flubs, Mark, you tried to cook dinner, and you tried to cook a Tom Brady dinner, connect the dots, everybody, and nearly cut off your index finger. How are we doing? People have been asking you, I'm sure, on Twitter.
Yeah, I appreciate
How's
that.
Your finger?
It's
Give
weird
us an
because it's in a smaller little tiny bandage, so it looks like, oh, it's fine, right? But like, whenever I take the bandage off, the skin is not healing. So I don't think we're out of the woods yet, and it's kind of gross to discuss. Apologies.
How's the nerve situation? How's your heart rate?
Things are fine, and globally things seem to be fine.
Moving on, the Tennessee Titans coming off a loss to the Raiders in week one, travel to Jacksonville to face the Jaguars. A lot of good feelings for Jacksonville after a very tough preseason, let's face it. They beat up on Houston in Houston, and now they get their home opener, a good spot, and they could, I'll say it, take control of the AFC South of the victory. Do you believe it? Hey, it's a weird division, Greg.
It wouldn't be shocking because, look, Doug Marrone handed Tennessee their lunch. It basically got Doug Marrone got this job because he destroyed Mike Mularkey's Titans. The Jaguars are kind of doing what the Titans did last year in terms of just like all running. We're going to just like beat you up. And it worked for a week.
Well,
fun to watch.
I love that Marrone a month plus ago basically said, here's what we're going to do this season. We're going to run the ball about 40 times a game. You don't need to know any more than that. We're coming right at you and you can try to stop us. Ran the ball 39 times last week. Leonard Fournette basically faced more 8-man boxes than any running back in the league. Still succeeded. So if you're the Jaguars, that alone is successful. And
they
no
out-tighten the Titans.
Right.
The Titans running game, I'm not going to get concerned after 1 week, but the offensive line really struggled in their third preseason game against Chicago and struggled last week opening up holes. So now you're going against Jacksonville. It's not going to be an easy matchup.
Everyone was excited about the way that game played out, but that was the perfect blueprint for Jacksonville to win a football game where they get a defensive score and they're able to play from ahead and start burning the clock. They still need a quarterback to make plays. So before I get excited at all about Jacksonville maybe being a surprise team this season, and I know their defense is very good, I'm going to have to see something from Blake Bortles, and he's going to have to make some plays. And I think he'll have to make some plays in this game because I think we're all – in agreement that the Titans have the potential to be a playoff team this year. They're coming off a tough loss. You think
it's a big game for them.
That this is a very important game for them, and they're going to come out with a ton of focus, and I feel like there are a lot of people are going to favor the Titans. So I expect them to score points, and I expect them to put in a good effort. So you're not going to get – just give it to Leonard Fournette 30 times and win this game.
It's not going to work as a long-term sustained plan. It's got to be their defense. But, I mean, we've been talking about Jacksonville's defense forever. And with 10 sacks and a touchdown last week on defense, they joined the 85 Raiders as the only two teams to ever accomplish that in
an
opener.
They're so deep. I mean, like A.J. Bouye on any other team would be such a huge story. I mean, he had a great game. The Jaguars fans, I think, had almost given up hope of Dante Fowler and maybe even Miles Jack, who had really had a slow start to his career. They wanted him to play middle linebacker. He couldn't cut it there. They had really good games last week. So if those two young guys step it up with the players that everyone was expecting to be good, like, this gets next level stuff, and they got a chance, Daniel.
Hey, you don't want to be called the Titans anymore? Don't start 0-2 here. Don't do it.
Well, you got it. They have got to take this game. I don't care where it's being played.
All right, good. Moving on, the Philadelphia Eagles, 1-0, and a 30-17, a nice win. The Redskins were kind of a mess last week. Let's face it. But the Eagles deserve credit for taking advantage of a team just looking like it wasn't ready to start the season. Now they have a real tough assignment because they're going to the Chiefs. And the Chiefs, if the Colts looked the worst, you could put the Chiefs in the conversation for the team that looked the best in week one. You go into Foxborough when they raise banner number 47 and you whip up on the Pats in the fourth quarter and in crunch time. People are feeling good. However, Mark, I feel bad about their situation in the sense that now Eric Berry is gone. How big a loss do you think that's going to be for the Chiefs going forward?
I think it's big. You go from Eric Berry to Daniel Sorensen. That's a massive drop-off. Eric Berry also sort of a heartbeat leader on the team too. But this Chiefs team is not one of these teams where if you take two or three players away, the whole thing falls apart. I think they're a balanced club on both sides. They're very well coached. And when you have the bonus of getting like a Kareem Hunt come in week one and star for you, you're just adding strength on strength. They can run the ball, and Alex Smith is more aggressive than he's ever been in his career right now.
The matchup was huge, you know, against New England as a factor. But I think the offensive line should have gotten a lot of the credit for Kareem Hunt's day and for Alex Smith's day. I watched that game. I like Kareem Hunt. I don't know if Kareem Hunt showed that he's this special transcendent back. I think he's going to be an NFL starter that was given big-time holes. And the most impressive thing I thought he did was him and Alex Smith were on the same page mentally on that long receiving touchdown. That's next-level stuff for a rookie back. Like, that shows that he's thinking like a veteran already. And if they protect like that, then Alex Smith can throw deep.
Do you want to hear a crazy stat?
I would love to hear
this
a crazy stat.
This came from our stat packet.
I don't want to hear one.
Last week against the Patriots, NFL media research notes. That's where this came from. He had those two 75-plus yard touchdowns last week, Alex Smith. He only had two of those in his career before the opener.
I already knew that. What else you got?
Did you author this packet? I thought that was it. Well, how about this? He's never had back-to-back 300-yard passing games.
That's pretty remarkable.
That may happen this season. I'm not saying this week.
You know what my favorite internet football thing I just discovered this week? I'm probably late to this.
NFL.com?
I love NFL.com. I love the entire NFL media team and everything that happens within it. I have to tell you that Brian Baldinger, who works for NFL Network, if you follow him on Twitter, he will post like little video clips of him watching tape and then narrate it, which it's kind of fun. It's a little bit adorable too. One of the ones he did was about the Chiefs offense, and he was just showing how having two, as he called them, chess pieces in Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, having them and being able to work them off each other with like rub routes and different things. They're both such explosive talents. And then he put in Kareem Hunt, and Greg, you're maybe kind of slowing down the hype train a little bit, which is fine. You could be right about that, but certainly the guy looks like he's very, very talented and maybe could be a star. There's a lot of weapons on this team.
I like the image of Greg stopping a train.
There's a lot to like about this offense.
Kelce's starting to get noticed as a big-time blocking tight end, which he came into league not knowing that. And so if you're putting that together, then you really create matchup problems like a Rob Gronkowski. And yeah, I think they won that game because of the defense. Ultimately, Justin Houston in that game was the reason they was the main reason they won that game, with a couple fourth down stops, with the sacks late in the game. He's so strong. Like, he is a defensive player of the year type of guy. And Derek Johnson, who is like an all-time, like, gonna have his jersey retired with the Chiefs, came back from another devastating injury and had a great game at I don't know what he is now, 34, 35 years old. Like, he is a big addition to this team. We didn't talk about the Eagles at all.
We should. Let's talk a little bit about the Eagles.
Well, I loved what I saw from Carson Wentz last week, and
You said you trusted him more than Alex Smith on our NFL Network.
What I meant by that was not attached to their teams. But if I want to have either one of these guys for a 12-year career, I know what Alex Smith is, and I do appreciate that he's this season especially seems to be on to a good thing. But career ceiling wise, I would gamble on Carson Wentz, and has a lot to do with what I saw last week. There's growth. That's all I'm saying.
I was saying this week.
But trust is more an immediate thing to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, trust to me was all. this week's game. To me, that was a Wentz game that showed the ups and downs of him.
But you know what? Mark's also smart. Plays. Mark, when you're on television, when you got opinions that are outside the box.
Thank you.
That gets people talking. And that gets the upstairs suits talking and the shadowy league figures doing cartwheels.
I don't expect any of that to happen based on the hit we just did on NFL Network, but it's a good theory.
Moving on to, let's head over to the Throne of Sleaze. Check in. It's been a while.
We come in peace.
They seem friendly.
I say we trust them.
How great for our planet.
The ungodly wind at the end.
The unthinkable has happened. 0-1, as we know, the Chiefs. We just talked about them. And now this is a very interesting matchup, Greg, for your Patriots and, Erica, your beloved Pats. Because they go to New Orleans, who had their own ugly loss in week one. And it's a situation where you want to say, and everyone's like, the Patriots will be fine. Don't worry about the Patriots. They lost to the Chiefs and never lost again. Sure, maybe. But this is a tough spot for them, Greg, because they're going on the road against an offense that probably is ready to break out after a tough week one. And they're a work in progress on defense, New England, right now.
This isn't the team you want to face when you have no coverage linebackers, which is what the Patriots have right now. Kyle Van Noy is their middle linebacker. They essentially played one or two linebackers throughout that game, six defensive backs, and you don't really see guys that can cover out of that group, and New Orleans is amazing at setting up matchup problems on those short passes. With that said, they've had four extra days. The Saints schedule maker did not give them any favors this week, that they had a Monday night game on the road. The Patriots have been sitting home an extra 4 days. The Patriots have been preparing for this. They're very good coming off a loss. And that the Patriots offense, even without Danny Amendola, who hasn't been practicing, has a concussion, even without Malcolm Mitchell and Edelman, they still have a lot of players on that offense to give the Saints a lot of problems.
I think it's two teams where you have to say, you know, there are a lot of new faces in Patriots land on offense, number one. But at the same time, everyone's dumping on the Saints defense, acting like, anything we saw in the preseason was a mirage, that they're just the same defense as before. I don't agree with that. I mean, they have a completely revamped, improved linebacking group, but it's all new faces. You got a lot of new faces in the secondary, and it's going to take a little bit of time for that to gel. I don't think they're going to be the same defense as we've seen in the past. And if you look at what happened with Tom Brady last week, the deep ball was a huge issue for him. I mean,
it's because they made him throw it. They did the Falcons' plan of getting up in the face of those receivers and make them win one-on-one. And eventually in the Super Bowl, it worked. But that's only because they got 90 plays. They didn't get 90 plays last week. And I think every team's going to do that. They're going to make Chris Hogan beat you one-on-one. Philip Dorsett. I mean, you would expect to see a lot of Gronk in this game.
Gronk, who got shut down by Eric Berry. And you know they're going to want to make him a part of the game plan early, I would think. And you notice old Daddy Zeuser, no crowing about hashtag gradual decline with Tom Brady, but he did have a very poor game. He had the worst completion percentage of any quarterback in the league in week one, in actuality. So are we just assuming?
I didn't think he played that poorly. Compared to last year, yes, but it wasn't that bad when you went and rewatched that.
So,
game,
but I'm
it was a lot of timing.
To be worried about it.
No, but that completion percentage was just for you. Said they were making him throw deep. I think it was 2 for 11 on deep shots.
16 for 36. That's a lot of throws.
There's a lot to worry about, because people use the word system quarterback like it's some pejorative, but Tom Brady's the ultimate system quarterback. He's been in the same system for 18 years. Brandon Cooks and him had bad timing on three different of the shorter routes. He caught the long one. He has to get timing with Philip Dorsett. The best things they do are change tempo and go five wide and then slow down the tempo. You can't do that when you have new players who don't really know all of the play calls just off the push of a button. It's tough.
And one other note on the other side with the quarterback, Drew Brees has had a lot of success in his career against the Patriots. Not a ton of games, but in four games, the Saints are 3-1, and he's got 10 touchdowns, one interception, a passer rating of 123. So, Brees, certainly Belichick and the defense haven't had Brees' number. If Brees is lighting it up, that's going to put a lot of pressure. It
should be
on
a good
Brady.
Good. This is everybody in the pool fantasy.
Well, and they had a
lot of scoring.
These two teams had one of the best games around a couple years ago. Last time they played, it was a fantastic game. I want to see, because here's the thing. You know, everyone talks about the running back situation with Mark Ingram, Adrian Peterson, and Kamara. It's like none of them crossed 20 yards last week. And I wonder when it comes down to Ingram and a guy like Adrian Peterson, do you have to get him into a flow? Is there one too many, you know, running backs on this team at this point?
Maybe.
I'm just saying, like, how it's hard to split.
None of them played well.
Sean
that kind of got
done this
lost
in the
shuffle. That it's not like Kamara or Ingram ran any better in that game than
Kamara by far was used more than the other two.
This game is going to be overwhelming.
We should just pick it since it's a
let's pick
close.
It.
Why not?
I mean, I'm taking the Patriots.
Patriots have won the Super Bowl every single time they've started 0-1, and I don't see them going 0-2 here. I do think it's going to be a game that people can come out and say some good things about the Saints, though, afterwards.
It's going to get sleazy. 0-2 Patriots enter in week three. Let's fly. Moving on. That's how you get on TV.
Well, I was going to say you want an edgy pick. That might have been it right there.
Again, that's probably
wish-casting.
Wish-casting, but... Yeah. There's some logic there, too. Moving on, the Minnesota Vikings 1-0. Everyone excited because they played a really strong game on Monday night in taking care of business against those Saints. Now they travel to Pittsburgh to face the Steelers. You know, I know there's talk of the Browns are improving, and they certainly seem to be. But not an underwhelming performance on balance, I think, by Pittsburgh, especially the offense, I should say. Will they have any better luck this time at home against the Vikings, another good defense?
Well, you know, so when Big Ben says, you know, we were lucky to play the Browns in week one, which I still find slightly condescending, I will say this. I think the Browns got lucky to face Pittsburgh when they did too, because Le'Veon Bell, no matter what kind of shape you show up in, was not himself last week. Martavis Bryant, who we know is ultra explosive, was not really even part. I think that those two guys combined for about 60-something yards.
Bryant had 14.
Yeah, I mean, he just wasn't in the mix. I think that all of that could improve with another full week of practice, and Pittsburgh's at home. They are not the same team on the road.
I'm a little worried about Martavis Bryant because of the preseason and into the regular season. I watched him pretty closely. He usually has that special pop off the screen, and maybe he'll get into it, but everyone just kind of, and I am including myself in this, just said, okay, we're plugging in old 2015 Martavis Bryant. But he didn't play football for a year, and he's not that guy yet. Le'Veon Bell, I'm not worried about at all. I actually think he looked pretty good on a few runs last week. But if you don't have Martavis Bryant, you have Juju Schuster-Smith, who struggled last week. Like, they're not that deep.
They need someone else other than Antonio Brown to step up as an option.
I think, well, Jesse James made some plays in the red zone, and Brown is as good as ever. Let's give Martavis a couple of weeks. Before it's like a concern. It makes sense that he would be rusty right now. Well, I have a sandwich prop that Martavis and Antonio Brown are going to be the best 1-2 tandem. I'm starting to get nervous about that because
Brown's going to have to do 70% of it. It sounds.
Although he had 184 yards, so you're not off to that bad start.
Yeah, that's.
I'll tell you about a tandem. Going on a tandem. Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen. 16 catches, 250 yards, and two touchdowns.
They're ahead right now. I thought you were going to go Seth DeValve and David and Njoku.
That goes without
saying. I'll take my chances with the Diggs-Thiel tandem.
Well, you know, I think Adam Thielen is someone that just he started to blow up last year at a 200-yard game down the stretch, and a lot of people didn't want to really believe in Adam Thielen. The guy is legit.
The threat is Cooper and Crabtree, and I realized that while I was watching that game. I was like, oh, no, I forgot. Those are guys. That was the 1-2 team last year, and they could repeat.
That was the best game that we can remember Sam Bradford ever having, and it was partly because their offensive line overhaul, like Carolina, got off to a good start. Now, they were playing New Orleans. This will be a much better test against a Steelers team that looks a lot different. different on defense. Kind of slipped under the radar. James Harrison didn't play in that game at all. I mean, they basically benched him. It's Chiquillo and T.J. Watt, and T.J. Watt just looks like there aren't many guys that could make an interception like he made last week and rush the passer like he rushes.
T.J. Watt had one sack of Kizer. I know he had two, but on one particular one where he was flushed all the way to the left, Kizer's dancing around, evading people near, you know, toward the edge, and Watt comes back. And you're not going to see many players
do
this.
That was one of the video clips that Baldy also
studied. Baldy did a great job with that one.
He beats the right tackle. He beats the running back. Kizer flushes out of the pocket. He comes around from the backside and gets Kizer. So we might be looking at another Watt superstar.
This is one of those games I feel like on a Sunday morning show, you would say something like, this is a good football game.
This is going to be a real slobber knocker.
I mean, I'm just saying, this is a good football game between two good football teams early in the National Football League season.
Yeah. This is just going to be two teams that are going to buckle up their chin straps, and it's going to be National Football League football at its finest.
Zero media subtweeting going on there.
Put your hard hats on and go to work.
Call your wife, tell her that you'll be home, or maybe not, because this game's going to be physical.
So the viewer may not make it.
I wouldn't wait too long to fill out those life insurance papers. Let's go to the field. Let's move on. The Chicago Bears are traveling to Tampa to face the Buccaneers, and the Buccaneers, again, another team that we kind of forgot about because they didn't play. They had the rare week one bye. Last time we saw them, they were having a really nice season on Hard Knocks.
One of the all-time best seasons. I would put it right there near the top.
Quick aside.
I will disagree with you, but that's fine.
I believe that it is right behind the Jets season of 2010 in the last 7 or 8 years. So I think it's in rarefied air.
I agree.
You sneaky don't like the show, Mark.
No. I find it a tad formulaic, and I would say latter seasons, there's been too much where 5 minutes passes and it's just montages. I want to learn about coaches. I want to learn about how teams operate.
Hey, and you got to turn around a 60-minute show that day. You're getting like,
I hear
you.
One of the best ones I thought was the Cincinnati Bengals stuff. Because you had three future head coaches on that team and you learned a lot about the coaches, and that's where I get interested.
Hard Knocks rankings, I think you go Jets 1. I still go Ravens 2. Maybe Ravens even 1 because – it broke the mold, and it was great.
Yeah.
It really was maybe the best season.
Ryan Billick had an outrageous, audacious performance.
And then Bucks number 3. They get up to the number 3.
Wow. I love the early ones. I'm not anti-Hard Knocks at all.
We should talk
about
this game and these teams, though.
Should we?
I feel bad. Yeah.
Should we actually talk about the game? Let's do it. The Chicago Bears. Give it a shot, Mark. It's a good shot.
I have given it a shot for over a decade. I have watched probably 95% of these.
The Bears 0-1, 23-17 losers to the Falcons in week 1. Should have won the game. Jordan Howard, make a play. Hey, Jordan, make a play in a big spot. You didn't, and your team lost. It's all your fault. And then you have the Bucks. So I feel like the Bucks are going to be obviously well-rested, maybe a little rusty even.
A little harsh.
Mark, what do you think? What?
Oh, it's not all his fault.
Well, you know.
I think it's tough to have a week one bye. You feel like, you know, talk about fear of missing out. You're not really involved.
We have no idea what it is because it never happened.
No, it happened back in back when the Browns came into the league and there were 31 teams. There have been a couple. There have been five or six that have had it, and it's been only one of those teams has made the playoffs. So I don't think that route channels back to much. But if you're the Bucks, I think that you've been waiting for this, and they are going to be amped up. They're at home. This is going to be basically the launch of Jameis Winston, who was a complete star in Hard Knocks. I'll give him that. I think DeSean Jackson is a huge part of this offense this year. They didn't have a play above 50 yards all last season.
It's going to be a mismatch in the secondary. That's where Chicago is weak. That's where Tampa is strong. I think Chicago is going to be a very difficult team to run against. They got some big bodies, and they made the Falcons running game look inept last week. And you got Jaquizz Rodgers starting at running back for the Bucks, so you're not going to have much of running games. I think you're going to see a lot of 4-wide, 5-wide, chuck it down the field. That's the recipe.
Does it matter at all that this team knows Mike Glennon very well?
It could.
I mean, I don't think it hurts. You've watched this guy in practice for years.
I want to see how the Bears use Tariq Cohen after a really great start in week 13. 13 touches, 113 scrimmage yards, the touchdown. this feels like it's going to head towards at least between Cohen and Jordan Howard, maybe a 50-50 split. Well, touch.
Yeah, it already was.
Yeah, I had a friend text me and be like, I took Jordan Howard really high in this fantasy draft.
Oof.
Should I be concerned? Yes.
Well, they have a really strange offense because he's their most explosive player, and he's a backup running back. They have an okay tight end group. You basically have no wide receivers, especially now with Kevin White out for the season. And it's almost like John Fox's dream. It's like, I don't need to – he almost won that game without needing the wide receivers at all. He's got his old double trouble, D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart again with Tariq Cohen and Jordan Howard. I mean, that's a good problem to have, having two great backs like that.
Let's move on. The Miami Dolphins. There you go. That's the other team that didn't play in week one. Travel to Los Angeles in the StubHub Center. And, you know, the Dolphins aren't going to be the only team at the StubHub Center on Sunday. Mark Sessler also there. Why are you going to be at the StubHub, Mark?
Well, I think the point is to kind of experience the game, not just as someone sitting up in the press box, but this is a cool thing for the NFL to have a 30,000-seat stadium. And they've done a lot of refurbishing of it to make it from a soccer venue to one that's ripe for the NFL.
What did they have to do?
Well, I mean, think about number of things. Like
I'm gonna be
there,
walking around,
observing. Gonna go pregame, postgame, talk to some players. I'll watch as much as I can, but I'm gonna watch it from different areas. But in terms of the locker room, good question, because the soccer locker room is so much smaller typically. I want to go in there and see what it looks like and how they did it. But I talked to some people inside the Chargers building, and they did a lot of work to make this a great fan experience. So I think it will be.
That's exciting. So they open up against it. You know what I forgot when I saw this right before the show, I was going through the different games. I kind of had forgotten because of the bye and everything, because of the hurricane. Jay Cutler's back in the league. It wasn't
right.
Just some like fun off-season storyline, and then it just right. floated away when real football started. He's now playing in a NFL game that counts on the road. Jay Cutler on the road in recent years has usually meant bad things, Greg. But do you think perhaps he can hang in this game?
I think he's going to have a good season. I think this is a massive test for his offensive line with Melvin Ingram, who gets better each and every year and was the best player on the field on Monday night, and Joey Bosa, who had a great game. And so you're asking Laremy Tunsil in his first start at left tackle. They're a little shaky maybe on the right side. That's not an easy ask right off the top on the road. And you would think they would try to establish Jay Ajayi as much as possible.
I want to see what the Chargers do on offense, how they approach this game. I understand that the new coaching staff wants to run the ball a ton and be balanced, but honestly, I want to see the Phillip Rivers from the fourth quarter against Denver and just unleash it. Use Travis Benjamin down the field. You have weapons at tight end, all sorts of wide receivers. Melvin Gordon made an incredible catch for a touchdown last week.
They couldn't run, and now you have to try to run against Ndamukong Suh and that Miami defensive line, which there's a lot of talent on this Miami defense, not at linebacker. There wasn't a lot of results, yeah, last year.
Moving on to what looks like the biggest mismatch of week two, the New York Jets head to the Black Hole to face the Raiders in their home opener. The Raiders had a really nice week one performance in Nashville, taking out the Titans. The Jets got beat by the Bills. And now this is – let's go down the list. Derek Carr at home after coming off performance when he looked very much like he will be an MVP candidate. Marshawn Lynch in his first game back in Oakland, coming off a week one performance where he showed that he was still – Marshawn Lynch, and then the other team is the Jets. I mean, it seems like everything is there for not just a win, but one of those games where at halftime you could kind of turn it off and know this game is taken care of.
This is famously.
This feels unnecessary.
Well, Erica Tamposi enjoys that sound effect.
I could be wrong, but I believe this is the stadium that Mark Sanchez famously ate his hot dog on the sideline.
It is.
So, you know, it might be one of those kind of days. McCown.
Oh, I thought you were about to call it a revenge game for the Raiders. I was like, wait, something had happened 8 years ago?
I'm just saying, it might not be that.
A lot of connective
tissue.
You're
right, it might not be that close. Jets were I was a little disappointed by their defense last week. I thought they would be respectable defense, and they really didn't put up a lot of resistance to Buffalo. I know the scoreboard didn't look too bad, but I thought the Jets would be better.
Their run defense, which has been there's been a lot of things wrong with the Jets on defense the last couple of years, but primarily it was the passing game. The defense has always been good. No Sheldon Richardson, obviously, now, and maybe the cracks are starting to show because you got rid of Snacks Harrison the year before or let him walk in free agency. A lot of missed tackles. You need to see more from them. On the positive side with the Jets, that I think we talked a little bit about this on Sunday. Jamal Adams was really all over the field in week one, and he looks like he's the real deal. People are talking about Marcus May. In fact, Todd Bowles, who doesn't really hand out praise easily, spotlighted both of the rookies and said that they both had strong week ones. There are things on defense for the Jets to be excited about, but you still have a lot of holes. The linebacker position is unsettled. The cornerbacks are it's not a great secondary when you factor in the cornerbacks. And they still, and this has been a years-long thing, decades-long now, since John Abraham left town, they can't get to the quarterback. So all this is playing right into the Raiders' hands.
Yeah, I mean, if you're the Jets, you have to probably go through a season like Cleveland did last year where it's going to be very tough on the fan base. But it's promising that when you're rebuilding with young players that you're already seeing them deliver and the safeties do
right,
look good.
Right, but this is the team that doesn't have a lot of young players.
They don't have a lot of draft.
They're starting, but you're still starting Josh McCown and Matt Forte, which is awkward for a rebuilding team. And you said it on our NFL Network hit or pick 'em. I can't even keep him
pick
straight
him.
Anymore.
It's the pick 'em show.
But I had written the same thing down that Amari Cooper, as great as he's been the last few years, looks like a different guy. Like he is ready to make a leap to another level where you're talking about him as one of the best
players. Yeah, he added weight, but it was the right kind of weight. I mean, we all add weight, but he like added muscle and he looks thick. And Crabtree to me also looks like a revived player. Think about a guy that couldn't even run at full speed a couple years ago after the surgeries he had. The two of them, I don't know how New York keeps up with that, because Oakland sometimes feels like they have four or five plays in their playbook. It's throw the ball to Cooper, throw it to Crabtree, run Marshawn Lynch up the middle, and it works.
And as dark as things seem for the Jets, I'll end it with one little positive note. The Raiders are one of the best teams in football now, and not so long ago, Reggie McKenzie was in year three of a rebuild with a rookie Derek Carr quarterback, and they started 0-10, and they were stripping all these old guys off the roster and getting out of cap hell.
A lot of people wanted McKenzie to lose his job.
You have to to see the plan through, and the Raiders did a nice job with this. You have to, if you believe in your guys, you have to let the structure stay in place to actually do a rebuild. We'll see if the Jets now in year three of their GM regime will have the same testicular.
Think of how many people passed on Derek Carr. How many of those teams that passed on Derek Carr would want him right now? Every one of them almost, outside of New England.
I think the Jaguars would have liked him.
Maybe.
Instead of Blake.
Moving on, the Dallas Cowboys. Kind of an easy ho-hum week one win for the Cowboys, and let's face it, they caught some breaks first. The Zeke Elliott suspension went into limbo, which allowed him to be on the field to start the season. Then Odell Beckham gets scratched from week one, and the Giants clearly were not prepared to handle the loss of Beckham in that type of game. So the Cowboys 1-0, and now they go to Denver. This is one of the best games of the week, I think, because despite the fourth quarter failures of Denver to put that game away, and then they needed to get, I wouldn't call it lucky, but they made a big play at the end to block the kick to get the win against the Chargers. The Broncos look feisty to me, and
yeah.
Trevor Siemian looks feisty to me. So Dallas is not going to go in there and handle business like they did with the Giants.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about. That Cowboys defensive performance was really impressive, but I don't know if the Giants are just one of the worst offenses in the league. I mean, still to hold any team to 3 points and get after it. Charles Tapper is a young pass rusher that they're hoping can step up along with DeMarcus Lawrence. But to go to Denver is a whole nother ask, because this looked a little bit more like the Broncos teams from a few years back, where you can get some push in the running game, and C.J. Anderson and Jamal Charles as a combination, I think, is really going to help take the pressure off my boy Trevor Siemian and make life a little easier for him.
No, that's what they couldn't do last year when they lost C.J. Anderson, was consistently run the ball behind an offensive line that was one of the worst in the league. I really think that their first-round pick, is it Garrett Bowles, the left tackle? Really good game last week. Made an incredible block downfield that sprung for a big play. I mean, that's a guy they needed that pick to hit big time, and it has, I think.
I want to see the Cowboys lost to Orlando Scandrick, and that already was a thin cornerback group. That's why I was
– he had a plate put in his hand, and he still thinks he's going to play this week.
He has a chance. Okay, I didn't –
But that's – I mean, if someone put it – I don't know. That
if someone put
like
a plate
invasive
in my hand, I wouldn't show up to work for weeks.
Oh! What?
Yeah. Well, you type a lot, so that would be that might even be tougher for you than Orlando Scandrick.
We gave the Broncos, by the way, a lot of grief for, you know, they got rid of Wade Phillips, changed to Joe Woods. Their run defense was so much better, really handled Los Angeles last week. So is that legit? Because they're about to face really the best offensive line and running game in the league. If their run defense is legit, you have Shaq Barrett and Von Miller coming after you, then they're back to being a major factor.
This was the game that gave us Tony Romo versus Peyton Manning.
Oh yeah.
In that incredible game from four seasons ago. I think that Dak Prescott versus Trevor Siemian, I think that's a great quarter. Trevor Siemian is going to be, if he continues at this pace, one of the stories of the season.
It's not peak Romo Manning, but
no,
it's really good. I agree. One of the games of the week.
And one note about Dak Prescott. I found it a little bit odd that he's not getting more love even entering the season. Coming off the year he had, he's playing for America's team and all that.
It's like he's always been overshadowed by Ezekiel Elliott.
And I think, and maybe there's a bit of a narrative in play, like, listen, if you...
It was a surprise when he won Rookie of the Year, when he literally had the greatest quarterback rookie season of all time.
And I think it almost works against him. He's like, oh, with that offensive line and that running game, you know, any guy could do it. But no, I don't agree with that. And if he goes into Denver against, you know what they call it, Mark? The new Fly Zone.
You're not big on these position group nicknames, are
I just
you?
Don't think No Fly Zone is that it's, good a name. Like, couldn't we do a little bit better?
Although, I will remember, I have a terrible memory, and I will remember this trio, Chris Harris, Aqib Talib, and Bradley Roby, as the No Fly Zone. Like, in 10 years, if you ask me who the No Fly Zone is, I'll actually be able to remember it.
Yeah, but it typically points to, like war-torn nations not wanting, like, invading armies to fly over space, but...
You never throw when you're in a Rocky Mountain Avalanche. That's better. Rocky Mountain Avalanche is better.
It doesn't really suggest defensive backs and secondaries and
don't come up this mountain.
Don't hit out at the Broncos just because the Jets tried to steal this nickname on Twitter.
That didn't go well.
Did they really?
Did not go well either.
That was a summer storyline.
That was a big-time summer storyline. All right, let's move. Who you got in that game, by the way? I'm just curious.
I guess I have
the pick and the score.
Well, I haven't officially made my picks for our NFL Pick'em show. I believe you can join our group on NFL.com/pick'em.
Why wouldn't you?
And you can watch us on NFL Pick'em on Saturday.
And now you're getting into my territory.
Well, Greg is
throw
like,
it out there. It's coming up.
Yeah. Okay.
Greg's trying to come
nine
up with a
morning,
pick while he goes on this.
9 in the morning, 2 p.m. and 11 p.m.
And
Eastern.
Then there's a Sunday showing that leads into game day morning, Connie Fox's show.
What
anyway.
I would do with Pick'em is I would DVR it and on every television in your house, and then also through any possible audio channel, play it on repeat for the next 4 weeks straight, just this week's show. See what happens to your family.
I'm going
to
take
– brings families together.
Sure does.
I'm going to take the Broncos.
Okay.
I took Denver last week. The two of you chuckled at me. Denver is one of the toughest places to play in the NFL, and I think they're going to pull off.
We chuckled at you?
Yes, on our Pick'em segment.
It wasn't some type of
It's documented. It's documented. And they're going to win again at home in Denver, 2-0 Broncos.
I believe the Cowboys, even though I do predict them to go 8-8, so I'm getting into dicey territory here, I do think they're going to win, and Dak Prescott's going to play well, and everybody's going to be like, oh, Dak Prescott's awesome. So that's my pick, the Cowboys, 31-27.
Denver 27-24 in overtime.
Did you pick? Oh, you picked the Broncos, right? What was your score?
Well, we need scores now.
Please. Provide one.
21-18.
Moving on. The Washington Redskins. Yes, sloppy week one loss at home. And that's tricky. You got to win that home opener because the way the schedule usually breaks, then you go on the road. You never know what you're going to get. And what you're getting here is the Rams. And you're getting a Rams team that just embarrassed their opponent, the Colts, 46-9. And the Colts are kind of a injury-riddled mess right now. So maybe that is camouflaging really the difference between the teams in that matchup. But still, you cannot say anything bad about the way the Rams played on both sides of the ball. So this seems like a really, really tough matchup for a Washington team, Greg, that's trying to figure out its stuff right now.
We talked in the offseason that the key to this team could be Terrell Pryor and Josh Dotson. Josh Dotson barely on the field last week, I think 18 snaps. Terrell Pryor clearly wasn't on the same page with Kirk Cousins, had a couple drops, did not have a strong game. That's not going well. Their offensive line was one of the better offensive lines in the league last year, and yet they couldn't protect Kirk Cousins at all. And now you got to go up against my Uncle Wade and Aaron Donald back.
He was your adoptive father.
That's what you said. That's
You're not
said.
My real dad.
He's got to go up against Aaron Donald on his way back and Robert Quinn and Trumaine Johnson. And this is not a team you want to play when you're struggling on offense. Kirk Cousins told Sean McVay, I owe you my career when he left town. Well, Sean McVay is on the other side, and that's why he's going to owe him a victory this week. I'm locking it up.
Wow.
So you got on my Rams corner. Sense. You're on my Rams corner. You came on my corner now.
What are you talking about?
Because I have the Rams. I had the Rams last week. I was locking it up. And look at this. I don't even put it past you that you saw that little icon.
Why would I want to?
Because I'm also going to lock it up. And I don't care if you already locked it up.
Why must you be opposed to each other? You've done something and you've unified here.
No, because Greg and I should have been unified back-to-back weeks, but he blinked.
Well, this keeps happening. I don't think about the lock of the week until late in the show, and suddenly there's only Seahawks, 49ers, right. And Packers, Falcons left.
So
like, well, I don't
a
like
lack
those.
Of preparation is not our problem. You need to, like, really – Mark and I, we went to the public library yesterday, and we did 12 hours of research before
sure.
making our lock.
Look, I got lots of notes.
And I came up with Cleveland. Went over Baltimore, so
right.
So anyway, I said this earlier in the week. I sincerely believe it. I feel like in the cosmos, the Rams are going to be one of the September storylines in the league because I really love the way Jared Goff played. And I know there's no Vontae Davis and all that, but he just looks so proficient, and he didn't look anything like the guy last year. And you know, confidence is such a big part of being successful at that position, and he's got plenty of it now. And now you got Aaron Donald back. I think this is going to be not 46-9, but I think it's going to be a decisive win.
One little tick. The Goff looked great last week, but he had the second worst QB rating against the blitz. And no team except the Panthers blitz more than the Redskins.
Yeah, I got to see more out of Goff. He had a good week, certainly better than any game he's had in his career. He had unbelievable pass protection that's just not going to happen where he's just sitting back there. There's no one near him for most of it. He's going through his like, that's great, but most quarterbacks can do well when they have that sort of protection. That's not going to happen every week. And I want to see a little more out of Todd Gurley. This has been an offseason narrative that I was – thumping, and I just want to see him break some tackles. Sometimes there's holes there. I want to see him do something special. We know he's solid, but let's do something
he's
special.
He's running out of rope in the sense of benefit of the doubt. And, Greg, you kind of were, you were hitting at it in the offseason, but it was another shaky game. I'll again point to some Baldy tape where he did a slow motion capture of a third and forever, where they just did a draw, which should have gained 8 yards.
Just had Baldy on the show.
I mean, he's offered to come on before.
Yeah, they had three different gaps he could have shot through, and there was no explosion to Gurley, and he got brought down for a 2 yard gain.
I think you were at the public library with Baldy.
Right.
I don't remember
you
being at the library.
A new sponsored segment. Dan reads Baldy's tweets.
Baldy's a world traveler, too. I would just like follow Baldy around, and I would like read his tweets as he was doing various adventures around the world. Right next to him, watching him tweet.
He would quickly have you arrested. I don't think that would be part of his travel plans.
Why do you say that? Arrested? That hurts me that you'd say that.
Well, I don't think it's personal.
Why wouldn't he enjoy my company?
There'd be a man following him everywhere he goes. It would seem slightly suspicious. It's not personal against you.
Well, the arrest certainly seems like it's personal. But I'm going to move
on. It's legal. It's legal.
Yeah. What is this? What is this pen thing?
Greg wants us to move on.
I'm not involved with this.
It was called a joke.
Show on. All right, let's go move on to the San Francisco 49ers at the Seattle Seahawks. Two 0-1 teams. But this one looks like a mismatch to me personally, Mark, that the Seahawks are going to get healthy at home after a tough week one loss in which they didn't even play poorly. They just got outplayed by another NFC giant. What do you think?
The only concern I'd have for Seattle is, again, it's another one of these left tackles. Rhys Adhiambo, I believe is how you say his name. Seattle's fill-in left tackle who got jobbed last week.
He's their left tackle.
He's their left tackle. And you are dealing with, I really like San Francisco's front seven. That could be a problem for Russell Wilson, who's not been protected well for a while now. But I do think Seattle takes this thing without too much trouble.
They did not let him operate. It was beyond just like, hey, they struggled. It was like no one could have succeeded with what happened with the Seattle line. And I like the San Francisco, too, on paper. I did not like what I saw last week.
Not from offense, especially.
But either side of the ball. You know, once Reuben Foster went down, that is a huge loss because he seemed like he was going to be a huge difference maker. They really got pushed around by Carolina up front. It was not it was a very Chip Kelly-like dud on both sides of the ball. It was just week one, but it was a bit of a dud on both sides.
I would be alarmed if Seattle doesn't score at least three touchdowns in this game. I think they will get – and you're right. The offensive line has been a concern. It was again last week. But, you know, this is a game Seattle has been winning for 5 years now. These inferior NFC West teams, usually the 49ers, come in. They take care of business and get healthy. I don't see that changing.
Well, I think one of their touchdowns is going to come on defense because it should have last week.
Hoyer was not protected well in that game against Carolina at all. There were sometimes four or five – Panthers got, you know, defenders are breaking through at the same time. Now you got to play Michael Bennett and Sheldon Richardson and Averill on the road. Forget about it.
Let's move on to this is the game of the week. Sunday Night Football. The Green Bay Packers coming off that win over the Seahawks travel to Atlanta where they open up that new building. I think the roof is open, Mark, at Mercedes.
I have read that they are going to. It's something stadium. Like the 15 – I don't know what the number is, but it's like 15 acres is how big that roof is, which is a weird way to measure a roof.
Very strange. Hubba hubba. So it's a rematch of the 2016 NFC Championship game. Mark, your thoughts on this battle?
Well, I mean, this is a NFC title rematch, and I do feel like – you know,
I said that.
Well, I agree with your point.
Not really a point. It's just a fact.
Well,
I would say
it was strong analysis by Dan to point out that these two met last January. It
wasn't analysis. Just I was like laying the tracks as a host.
Everyone's panicking over Atlanta's offense, and I just don't quite feel that we're at that point at all yet. And I think they're going to get right at home. Julio Jones, talking about that game, lit them up for 180 yards. This is a different situation this time around. I think Green Bay's improved their secondary some, but if you're Green Bay, you have to open with Seattle, and now you have to deal with the Falcons. Is this essentially another playoff run
like
in
this.
September?
This is too early in the season for these two teams to play, especially after Green Bay, Seattle. But you bringing up that game in their secondary points out who was covering him that game, Ladarius Gunter, who
released
now was not even on the team. They cut him, so that shows.
Didn't he work at the coffee shop in Friends?
Stop. That was That shows how much deeper they are now. They actually drafted Kevin King to start. Everyone said, okay, now we're better. So Kevin King's not even playing for this team because they have their veterans out there. They looked like a tougher defense last week, and I'd be a little worried about the Falcons' run game because they were really dominated by Chicago. And, you know, a lot of their offense does come off that run game. They're playing up against Mike Daniels, who had a great game last week and certainly can cause problems. So I'm watching that Devontae Freeman in the run game.
Ty Montgomery, I get it. I see what they're trying to do, but I wasn't blown away by him. And I feel like Green Bay simply refuses to get year to year a run game that you can truly rely on.
I really liked what I saw out of him last week, especially to end that game, that he got tougher and tougher as he went. I thought he showed a little something that, okay, maybe this is a 15-20 carry a game type of guy. You got to see, you know, more than just 1 week, but I like how he closed that game.
I think someone to watch in terms of having a bounce back season is Randall Cobb, who got cast into a number one receiver role a couple of years ago, and it was clearly not a good fit. Last year, he disappeared for stretches of the season. I thought he was in a perfect situation last week, and I could totally
see him.
He got
opened a bunch.
Yeah, I could totally see them getting back on track, and if he stays healthy, having like a 90 catch season.
Then they're so deep. I mean, he has so many options to throw to.
Their offense is going to be, once they get warmed up, and that was...
Well, and Martellus Bennett, he looks like he fits right in.
He's a perfect fit. The running game you can ask questions about, but if they just can get in sync and they're rolling, they're going to score a lot of points this year.
One injury to watch, Brian Bulaga, coming off that ankle injury, has missed practice on this Thursday. They sent him home with the flu, and typically the flu does not seem like something that would stand in the way of playing, but combining it with the ankle, that right side of the line was not good last week.
Yeah, and I'm expecting this Falcons defense to be better this season. They were okay as a group last week, But Devondre Campbell really stood out. This is why you got to watch more. You know, 1 week, you never know. I mean, if you're giving out Defensive Player of the Year, I might have to give it to Devondre Campbell right now as a second-year linebacker. And suddenly, him and Deion Jones flying around together. If Campbell really improves that much, that is a difference-making duo.
Finally, Monday Night Football. The Detroit Lions, yes, they beat the Cardinals last week at home. Now they travel to the Meadowlands to face the Giants. A very dispiriting loss for the Giants in week one at Dallas. But now it looks like Odell Beckham, as of now, is heading toward the right direction and will be playing on Monday. We'll see. But he did practice in a limited capacity on Thursday, which is a very good sign. And you wonder if that's what it's going to take to wake up the Giants offense. Of course, Beckham has been there. They haven't scored over 20 points in seven straight games. He was there for all those games too, but maybe he gets in the mix and they get a little flow going because it can't get worse than what it was last Sunday night.
He also, a little while ago, called the injury a 6 to 8 week injury. We're raising suspicion that he whether or not he'll be available in this. So there's a lot more.
He called it that?
Yeah, there's more to there's.
And the injury was, what, 4-3 weeks ago?
Yeah. Well, no, this is going to be 4 weeks.
Four.
Yeah.
That's problematic. This Giant, he can't save this Giants offense. Everyone's like, okay, you know, you saw the difference without Odell Beckham. Yeah, that's true. But they were a really poor offense last year with Odell Beckham. They to have the lack of confidence to not test that Cowboys secondary really at all. Like Eli Manning just wasn't having it. Third and 12, I'm throwing it 2 yards. Third and 8, let's throw it 4 yards. You know, third and one, let's not even trust our running backs. Let's just go 4 wide and try to complete a pass. Like, it was right there with the Jets. Even the Jets, I think, looked better to passing the ball early in that game with any offense in the league at the bottom.
That's why I made New York my Super Bowl pick, and no choice but to stick with that, but it feels very endangered. What I don't like about everything, along with everything you just said, you knew you had issues at running back. You didn't do anything to change that. And they seem like this. It's just a continuation of last season on offense.
And we'll see if this what kind of matchup this is in terms of going against Detroit. But when I saw what games were left, Dan, and I knew I still had to lock it up, I thought pretty hard about locking up the Lions. If I could do a double lock it up, am I even allowed to do that?
Can't do it.
I would double lock it up because I really do like the Lions to win this game. And Stafford showed me something last week. And more than that, he's got more help around him this year. I think Kenny Golladay could really change this entire offense because he looks so good on the perimeter and his feet for a big guy able to beat some smaller cornerbacks at the line. And now that he's outside, Golden Tate's inside. I love me some Golden Tate in the slot, and he was playing out of position on the outside. So suddenly two spots are better, the line's a little better, and you're cooking with gas.
I feel like there's a missed opportunity because Greg's so excited
about
the line.
Yeah, I'm more excited about this one.
And you know what?
I'm locking it up! Wait.
No, you're not.
Well, if you want to pull out your lock for the Rams, you could do that.
I don't know.
Oh, wow, 2 weeks in a row.
This is too confusing.
Well, no,
it's
honestly.
Pretty straightforward.
I'm sticking with the Rams.
Okay. No, I feel like it's a missed opportunity.
The fans will know that I double locked it up.
No, they will not. They will not respect that. They will not observe that. No,
they will not.
I'm into the Lions.
I was going to lock up the Giants, but because it was Monday, I didn't think it was going to be as theatrical. So I went with the Rams. We could have had a lock.
You were on a strange psychic wavelength.
We could have had a lock off, is what we could have had.
Well, why don't you both get out of the Rams lock and do that? Let's make this exciting.
Are we allowed to do that?
You want to do it?
All right.
It's a lock off.
It's a double lock off.
It's a double lock off.
Wow.
Listeners, the cutout of the show early will be very confused.
Big history here.
Okay, that's it. That's all the games that will be coming up Sunday and Monday. Make sure you check in on Sunday night, the flagship program, the only Sunday night show that matters, the Around the NFL podcast, Week 2 recap. That's when you'll hear from us again. You could check out our videos at NFL.com/ATN video. You could check out our Pick'em show, our NFL Network show that we do with the Dave Damaschuk football program and also Shepherding Logs. We do that. That's going to be on the air on Saturday also early Sunday. So check all that out. There's plenty to go around.
So much. And for our UK listeners, can you throw that in there?
Throw that in there, yes.
We are going to be on Sky Sports. It appears twice a week throughout the season. I believe it's 5:45 London time, if I'm doing the math right. in the afternoon in their pregame show just before kickoff, 15 minutes before kickoff, and then, you know, 10, 15 minutes after afternoon games.
Bringing a little spice to the U.K.
I mean,
if
you're staying up till whatever it is, almost 1 o'clock in the morning to watch us there, then then we respect you and we want to see proof of it.
Huge amount of respect. All right, let's go. Got to respect. Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm. The old boss and the loose cannon behind the glass. Till Sunday night.